I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's September 19th, and we have a lot to talk about. And today, we're talking about a subject that isn't talked about nearly enough. Today, we're talking about sex and MS. The strains and pressures of living with a chronic illness like MS can and will have an impact on your most important and closest relationships. And it's not unusual to see sex and intimacy become unintended and unnecessary collateral damage in the day-to-day challenges of living with MS. That doesn't have to be the case, and in fact, it shouldn't be the case. Madeline Esposito is joining me today to discuss some of the common sexual problems faced by people living with MS, along with treatments designed to resolve those problems, ways to maintain intimacy in your relationship, and tips for a healthier sex life. Madeline is a mental health clinician at the University of Wisconsin Health's Behavioral Health and Recovery Clinic. She's also a certified sex therapist and a clinical adjunct faculty member at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. But before we get to my conversation with Madeline Esposito, there are a few other things that you should know about. In just a few days, Real Talk MS will be celebrating our 6-year anniversary. You know, when you think about the longevity of most podcasts, that's more like 6,000 years. And what's most amazing to me is that in those 6 years, that's every month for the last 72 months, there has never been a single month when the number of people listening to this podcast hasn't increased. And all I can say is thank you for choosing to continue this conversation with me. I'll have a lot more to say on next week's episode of the podcast when we highlight some of the most important conversations that we've had over the past 6 years of Real Talk MS. If you're a regular listener, you've heard me talk recently about the National MS Society's Community Review of MS Research Committee. I became a part of this committee just a few short months ago, and I think it's important to share the work that this relatively new committee is involved in, but you guys hear from me all the time. So I thought it would make more sense to have a conversation with someone who's been a member of the committee since its inception a little more than a year ago, and someone who joined the committee the same time that I did, just a few months ago. So I'm excited to introduce you to Cheryl Weeks Frye, a relatively new member of the Community Review of MS Research Committee, and Christine Werner Ozug, who's been a member of the committee since its launch. Christine, Cheryl, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for having me as well.
Christine, let me start with you. How would you describe the work that the Community Review of MS Research Committee does?
Our goal is to have meaningful and collaborative interactions between people affected by MS, whether that's if you're living with MS or you care for someone that has MS, and researchers, where research decision-making is guided by people affected by MS as partners and as an advisory body.
So, Christine, can you explain where the committee fits in the MS Society's research approval process?
So, all research grant proposals that are deemed to be of scientific merit through our scientific peer review process will then undergo a community review in our committee to help identify any patient-centered concerns about the proposed research, such as any burdensome protocols or outcomes of perhaps low interest to people living with MS. And these insights, along with the outcomes from the scientific review, are then taken together to inform the final funding recommendations.
Cheryl, let me ask you, what got you interested in being a member of this committee?
What got me interested is, as a team leader, team captain for Walk MS, and a district activist leader, going to our legislative bodies and requesting funding, it was really an opportunity to find out how this funding takes place. What are the steps, and how do we decide? How does the society decide what research grants to award?
Cheryl, without referring to any specific research proposals, can you walk us through what happened this past June at the last committee meeting?
Sure. After we were given access to the proposals, we spent time individually reading the grant proposals, reading the plain language description, and reviewing them. And then we rated them 1 to 5. And then we had to write a critique about each of the grants. And then we got together in July, and we came together to discuss our ratings and then come to a consensus of to which grants that we thought should be funded.
Christine, how would you describe your experiences as a member of this committee?
This has been the most rewarding work that I've participated in to date since my diagnosis with MS in 2012. To be able to represent the MS community with having a voice in research, to share my lived experience with MS, which is expertise that a researcher or a physician may not necessarily have. It's not only important, but it's also very necessary to help propel our pathways to a cure.
So what have you learned as a member of the committee?
One of the biggest things I've learned is, although we all have MS or care for someone with MS, we all come from different lived experiences with MS. And those experiences are so vital. And I learn so much from each member of the committee every time we get together to discuss a proposal. And I can think that I've thought about each proposal from all angles and all sides and every voice of every person that I've ever met affected by MS. And then, to my surprise, somebody on the committee voices something that I haven't maybe thought of. And so I'm constantly learning, which for me is wonderful because I love learning and I love research, which is why I'm so happy and honored to be a part of the committee.
Let me ask you, Cheryl, why is including the voice of people affected by MS important when it comes to funding MS research?
I think it's important that researchers have a voice from someone actually living with MS or caring for someone with MS. It gives them a perspective that they may have not thought about. Everybody's different with MS. And even Christine was saying that she thought about the grants and how it would affect people. And then you find out that that's not something they're interested in, who's living that particular portion of the disease, or they're just not interested in that. It's not relevant to them. So I think that those kinds of considerations need to be brought to the researchers so that they can have an idea of better grant proposals, better research, and things of that nature.
Well, Cheryl Weeks-Frye and Christine Werner-Ozug, I want to thank you for stepping up and ensuring that the voice of people affected by MS is part of the research funding approval process at the National MS Society. And thanks for talking with me today.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having us, and thank you for being a part of the committee as well.
Over the past few months, we've been talking about the benefit and importance of moving away from the traditional descriptors of multiple sclerosis. the very familiar terms that include relapsing remitting MS, secondary progressive MS, and primary progressive MS, and instead adopting a new framework, a way of talking about MS, researching MS, and treating MS that's based on the actual biological mechanisms that are taking place within an individual's central nervous system. If you've missed these conversations, you can get up to speed by checking out episode number 280 of Real Talk MS, and I'll be sure to include that link in today's show notes. This new framework for describing MS has been proposed by the International Advisory Committee for Clinical Trials in Multiple Sclerosis. It will allow neurologists and MS specialists to provide precision-based treatment that's focused on mitigating or resolving the specific events taking place in each individual patient's brain and spinal cord. The International Advisory Committee for Clinical Trials in Multiple Sclerosis has convened a working group to build on the proposed framework and recommend a model of MS that's based on biological mechanisms. And full disclosure, I'm honored to be a member of this working group. Since updating the fundamental way that MS is described, diagnosed, and treated is something that's going to impact people living with MS, researchers, clinicians, patient advocacy organizations, policymakers, and the pharmaceutical industry, literally everyone in the MS ecosystem, we wanted to understand the MS community's perspectives on the need to change those MS clinical course descriptors and expectations for a new approach to describing MS. And so an online survey was created and distributed to multiple organizations on several continents, including the European Committee for Treatment and Research in MS, the Americas Committee for Treatment and Research in MS, the Latin American Committee for Treatment and Research in MS, the Middle North Africa Committee for Treatment and Research in MS, the Canadian Network of MS Clinics, the clinics associated with the Italian MS Registry, the research and healthcare professional communities that are registered through the National MS Society, the Australian, Italian, and UK MS Societies, as well as the Consortium of Multiple Sclerosis Centers in North America. And to capture the opinions of individuals not associated with a specific organization, the survey was further distributed through LinkedIn and Twitter. The survey was open from December 12, 2022 through January 26, 2023, and 502 responses were received from 49 different countries. The majority of respondents turned out to be neurologists and researchers, and 77% of the survey respondents supported changing the current MS clinical course descriptors. They preferred a framework that informs treatment decisions, aids in the design and conduct of clinical trials, allows patients to understand their disease, and links disease mechanisms and clinical expression of disease. Clinical validation before making these broad changes and ease of communication to patients were rated as the most important aspects to consider when developing any new framework for describing MS. There's a lot more work to be done here, and that's going to involve further engaging a broad range of the affected stakeholders. So this is something I know we'll continue discussing in the months ahead. If you'd like to review the details of the results of this survey, you'll find a link in today's show notes. A research team at the University of Chicago's Pritzker School of Molecular Engineering has developed a novel vaccine that, in animal models of MS, has been shown to completely reverse the autoimmune response linked to multiple sclerosis while leaving the rest of the immune system intact. In multiple sclerosis, the body's immune system mistakenly attacks healthy myelin cells in the central nervous system, which is why MS is defined as an autoimmune disease. Now, a typical vaccine teaches the human immune system to recognize a specific virus or bacteria as a foreign invader that should be attacked, and the T cells in our immune system are the attackers. That's their job. However, this research team has created what you might think about as an inverse vaccine. This vaccine erases the immune system's memory of a specific molecule, and that effectively stops the autoimmune response that destroys healthy cells. Here's how it works. Cells die in our bodies every day. They're replaced by fresh cells. But these cells that have died appear as broken cells to our immune system. Our liver has the capacity to naturally mark these broken cells with a do not attack flag, so that our immune system doesn't identify them as somehow irregular, foreign, and then attacks them. The research team took one of these so-called broken cells that the liver marks as not harmful but friendly, and combined it with a molecule that is being attacked by the immune system, in the case of MS, a myelin molecule. So instead of revving up the immune system, as we would see in a typical vaccine, this vaccine tamps down the immune system, but only in one very specific way, the way that our T cells identify myelin in MS. When this inverse vaccine was introduced into an animal model of MS, the immune system stopped attacking myelin, allowing those nerves to function normally again and reversing symptoms of the disease in the animals. So it's not just a treatment that might prevent MS. It actually stops MS and reverses the damage that's been done. This inverse vaccine is a potential game changer, but it's still very early in the game. There's a phase 1 clinical trial underway to test this vaccine for safety, so there's a long, long way to go. But it's exciting to be traveling down this new path. Now, if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. I want to take a moment to congratulate Dr. Rhonda Vaskul for being named the first winner of the Rachel Horn Prize for Women's Research in MS. Dr. Vaskul is a neurologist, research scientist, and clinician. She's a professor of neurology at UCLA, where she holds the Jack H. Skirball Chair for Multiple Sclerosis Research and serves as a director of the UCLA Multiple Sclerosis Program. Dr. Vaskul has dedicated her career to furthering our understanding of the impact of sex hormones and genes on the biological processes that impact MS. She'll receive her award at ECTRIMS, the largest MS research conference in the world, taking place this year in Milan, Italy, in October. I'll be attending ECTRIMS, and I'm looking forward to speaking with Dr. Vaskul while I'm there. In the meantime, if you'd like to listen to Dr. Vaskul describe some of her work investigating sex differences in MS, I'll invite you to listen to episode number 189 of Real Talk MS, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. It's always struck me as a little ironic that as a community, we have very little trouble discussing sex differences in MS. But we seem to stumble a bit when it comes to discussing sex difficulties in MS. Now, clearly, they aren't close to being the same thing. But when an overwhelming majority of both men and women affected by MS are facing difficulties associated with physical intimacy, you'd think we'd be hearing about it more often. In a moment, you'll meet my guest, sex therapist Madeline Esposito, and we're talking about sex and MS. Salt and Peppa said it back in 1990. Let's talk about sex, baby. But here we are, more than 30 years after Salt and Peppa's effort to raise the question, and in the MS community, we still aren't doing a very good job of talking about sex, which is particularly unfortunate when you consider that studies indicate between 40 and 80% of women with MS and 50 to 90% of the men with MS experience some form of sexual dysfunction. Intimacy and sexuality are important components of a happy and healthy life, and although MS can affect sexual feelings and responses, sexual intimacy doesn't have to disappear when one partner is living with MS. Madeline Esposito is joining us today to discuss some of the common sexual problems faced by people living with MS, along with treatments designed to resolve those problems, ways to maintain intimacy in your relationship, and tips for a healthy sex life. Madeline is a mental health clinician at the University of Wisconsin Health's Behavioral Health and Recovery Clinic. She's a certified sex therapist and a clinical adjunct faculty member at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Welcome to the podcast, Madeline.
Thank you so much, John.
As I mentioned a moment ago, many people living with MS avoid discussing sexual problems because either they're embarrassed or they don't realize those problems could be related to their MS. So I hope you'll take a moment to explain the role sexuality plays in our lives and why it's so important to address these kinds of problems as we would any other MS-related symptom.
Given the stats that you previously mentioned of how folks are affected by sexual health problems with MS, that's a large number. And I don't think it can be understated how important sexuality is. When sex is not going well, when sex doesn't feel well, that is enough to affect how we feel about our bodies, how we feel about our relationships, how our partners interact with us. And so I do think that talking about sex is the biggest and first step someone can take in taking back empowerment over their body and their pleasure.
So how does MS directly affect sexual feelings and function?
So the central nervous system, the CNS, it makes sexual arousal possible. The brain, sexual organs, and other parts of the body, it sends messages to each other along the nerves that run along the spinal cord. And MS-related damage to these nerve fibers, it can directly affect and impair arousal, sexual responses, in the same way that damage can affect a person's ability to walk or see. And just as with other aspects of MS, sexual problems can arise at any point in time.
What kinds of sexual problems are the direct result of MS-related damage to the nerve fibers in our central nervous system?
Absolutely decreased or absent sexual desire, especially as someone's body and they start to feel differently about how their body functions. Altered genital sensations like numbness or pain or hypersensitivity, decreased muscle tone in the vagina, difficulty or inability to get an erection, decreased vaginal lubrication and then clitoral engorgement, difficulty with or inability to ejaculate, as well as decreased frequency and or intensity of orgasms.
And are there treatments available for people who experience these kinds of sexual problems?
Absolutely. So sex therapy is one useful option that helps to explore and enhance sexual satisfaction. Sex therapy is a specialty of psychotherapy where all we do is help people feel better in their bodies as sexual beings, as well as explore different behavioral interventions that can improve someone's sexual health. We don't do any examinations. We don't touch our clients, but we simply just help them learn the tools for a healthy sex life.
So what are the most common MS symptoms that might impact sexual feelings and function?
Fatigue is a major one, then pain, spasticity, bladder, bowel changes, depression, and cognitive changes as well.
You mentioned fatigue, and I've often said that fatigue is something that gets in the way of fully engaging in so many areas of life. So what are some tips for finding the interest and the energy for sexual activity when you're dealing with MS-related fatigue?
Fatigue is a major component as to how sexual desire will decrease with time. So scheduling sexual activity is one of the most useful interventions. Usually when I mention scheduling sex with my clients, they look at me like I have three heads. And I like to remind them that this doesn't mean that sex can't happen at other times. It simply means that there's time dedicated for intentioned quality interactions with their partners in whatever way that they're feeling up for it. I also am, reminding clients that scheduling means that you can also take back control of what you're doing during that day. So being able to not invest in activities that are time intensive or energy intensive, as well as being open to intermissions during sex and not having sex expectations as to like what needs to happen during sex. So penetration being not a requirement, as well as expanding the kind of sexual aids that are used in the bedroom.
Bladder problems are common in MS. And if you're dealing with leakage, it can make sexual activity embarrassing. And that leads to many people with bladder issues simply starting to avoid sex. Is there anything someone with MS-related bladder issues can do to prevent bladder accidents from happening during those intimate moments?
Absolutely. So scheduling sex, which I previously mentioned, it helps to lower that anxiety for that leakage. And with scheduling sex, it provides the opportunity to empty the bladder beforehand, as well as making sure you have waterproof sheets. Rubber is a great alternative unless somebody has a latex allergy. Avoiding positions that place pressure on the abdomen, as well as avoiding caffeine and alcohol beforehand. Some people also find it beneficial to have sex initially in the shower or the bath so that leakage is not as noticeable.
People living with progressive MS often rely on their partner to assist them with everyday activities like getting dressed, transferring to a toilet, or getting in and out of bed. Often, a care partner relationship stops feeling like a relationship of equals, and that imbalance can be an obstacle to intimacy. What's the best path to maintaining or reclaiming a sexual relationship between a care partner and care recipient?
I don't think that it can be understated how chronic conditions like MS affects relationships and affect partners. Many of the people I work with describe feeling infantilized as though their partner is the parent and they are the child in need of being taken care of. This is a recipe for lower desire in both partners and can result in lost connection. Some of my recommendations include dedicating time together for dates and also introducing erotica or other sexual aids that reignite interest and curiosity and then change those typical routines. Some folks may also benefit from couples therapy to learn more about how to increase desire in their relationship.
Communication is often the key to resolving all kinds of relationship-related problems. What are some tips for how partners can start talking about these sensitive issues in an open and honest way?
I appreciate conversation starters, especially the use of sexual health books that can foster these conversations. Books like Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski, or Speaking from the Heart and Hottership. And either of these books and many others actually include talking points that can be shared with partners to facilitate that conversation. Sometimes simply just sending over a text or writing a letter or sending over an email can help to begin that conversation and give the partner some space, some time to come up with something that to come up with a thoughtful response.
Should someone with MS be communicating with their healthcare team about sexual problems they might be experiencing? And if so, who should be included in those conversations?
That's a great question. I do think that health professionals should be talking about sex with their patients, but I also recognize the hurdles and the barriers to that. And that's something I'm continuously trying to shift in a medical system. So with that in mind, I do encourage my clients to engage in conversation with their medical providers, to ask questions and to advocate for themselves as sexual beings. Many providers do not prioritize sexual health as requirements for a satisfying life. I also recommend discussing it with care providers that are prescribing medications and asking questions about sexual side effects.
I heard you mention sex therapy earlier. When is it time to reach out to a sex therapist? And what kinds of things should someone be considering when they're looking for the right sex therapist for them?
It's never too early to reach out to do therapy. You don't need to be in acute crisis or be super depressed or really struggling to initiate sex therapy or therapy at all in general. Sex therapists were trained to provide sex education and space for individuals and couples to share their most absolute secret and sensitive concerns and share these without judgment or being misperceived. I recommend linking with someone who's certified through the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, or ASECT. We have a rigorous certification process and are equipped to use evidence-based approaches that would promote the most change.
Madeline Esposito, thank you for all you do to improve the quality of life for people affected by MS. And thanks for talking with me today. I hope we can do it again.
My pleasure. I look forward to it, John.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/316. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free RealTalk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of RealTalk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.